हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 80, chapter 69. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Supreme Lord is the greatest upholder of religious principles. Thus, when he noticed Narada, he rose at once from Goddess Sri's bed, bowed his crowned head at Narada's feet, and joined his palms, had the sage sit in his own seat. The Lord bathed Narada's feet and then put the water on his own head. Although Lord Krishna is the supreme spiritual authority of the universe and the master of his devotees, it was proper for him to behave in this way, for his name is Brahmanyadeva, the Lord who favors the Brahmanas. Thus Sri Krishna honored the sage Narada by bathing his feet, even though the water that bathes the Lord's own feet becomes the Ganges, the ultimate holy shrine." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "All qualified Brahmas worship him, and therefore he's called Brahmanyadeva. Brahmanya means one who fully possesses the Brahminical qualifications, which are said to be as follows: truthfulness, self-control, purity, mastery of the senses, simplicity, full knowledge by practical application, and engagement in devotional service." Lord Krishna possesses all these qualities, and he is worshipped by persons who themselves possess such qualities. There are thousands and millions of names of Lord Krishna, Vishnu Sahasranama, and all of them are given to him because of his transcendental qualities. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, "The Lord of the devotees, Satpatihi, after bathing Narada's feet, spoke to him." The main verb spoke is in verse 16. Someone may protest, "It is not proper for the Lord to wash the feet of his servant." But he is called Brahmanyadeva, indicating his quality of being respectful to the Brahmanas. Because Narada was a Brahmana and Krishna was respectful to Brahmanas, his action of washing Krishna's feet was proper. Also, one should not think he did this to purify himself, because the water from his feet, the Ganges River, is purifying for all. Asesha Tirtha. It should be understood that Narada, as a servant, did not reveal the Lord's superiority in order not to obstruct the desire of the Lord. Right, so you have the position of the Lord, that he is the supreme, but you have the aspect of how he likes to interact with his devotees. So if he's taking the role of a Kshatriya, therefore then he's worshipping the Brahmins. Right? If he's taking the role of a Brahmana, then if someone's a senior Brahmana or like this, then he'll deal. Like you see, Maharaj Prataparuta, when he came, Lord Chaitanya tended to stay away from him. Because he's a king, he's engaged in just ordinary dealings. But then when it was revealed how he's a devotee and all that, then the Lord would interact. So, you see, is that the Kshatriyas, they'll always respect the Brahmins. Now the Brahmins, they'll of course be respectful in the dealings, but whether they'll want to interact or be involved in what they're doing is another thing. But Brahmins involved in what the Kshatriyas are doing, then that's always very useful. That's always important. So, who? Bali Maharaj, respected, but yes, but he's a Kshatriya, you know, but then that's the Lord. Here it's reversed. The Lord's the Kshatriya, and the devotee's the Brahmin. Like that. So there, in that case, the devotee was the Kshatriya, and he was the Brahmin. So the principle is the same. So the Lord likes to do things in this way. But we have to understand is him doing it this way wasn't for his own purification, it's just how he likes to do things. But when we follow in this way, we become purified. So Krishna. Yes.
There's an anxiety that from nectar of devotion, if we practice Vaidisadhana Bhakti and then worship the Lord in that way, then even at the level of prema, we have this on the back of our minds, we know that Krishna is the supreme, and that position is remains. So we can really worship him, you know, in the main rasas. Even if we do, the flavor of him being supreme disturbs our relationship. We can't fully relax. Okay. However, for those who practice Raganuk Sadhana, then it's not there. So they can fully be engaged in his worship without his position, you know, clouding their relationship.
See, the point is this. There's Vaidhi Bhakti is the form of the practice of Bhakti. Because when we say Raganuga Bhakti, there's no form for Raganuga. Is that what he says? There's not a form of Raganuga Bhakti. You have Sadhana Bhakti, and the rules regarding Sadhana Bhakti, that's defined by the Vaidhi.
Yes.
And then Raganuga means the spontaneous performance of those duties in connection with Krishna. Right? So it's not a separate system. So therefore, from that first understanding, we shouldn't be in anxiety that we're following Vaidhi, therefore then one won't be able to have that grudge of praying. Because there is no other Vaidhi. There is no other system.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's professed as if it's some completely different path. No, it's the different mood in the same path.
Yeah.
Like that. So, because you know he's the supreme, but our knowing of him as the supreme is based on which features of the Lord?
These features?
Yeah. Of the three.
Bhagavan.
Paramatma. And Brahman. So we have all three then.
It should
be those two. Because the point of the Aishwarya means is those two. He's God, he's the supreme, he's all pervading, those aspects. So that then brings us to that principle that's there. So for us it's actually different from Bhagavan, because it's Bhagavan who happens to be those two things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of taste. So let's just say, okay, you have the high court judge. At his home, his family members, they all know he's the high court judge. But does that matter? Does that matter to the grandson that he's a high court judge? No, it's, you know, we're playing horsey. So he's going to be sitting on his back and riding around the living room.
Yeah.
Right? So it doesn't matter. It's not that they don't know. This idea that they know and it messes with these things. No, it's they know, but they don't care. The relationship's not based on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
While for others, then that knowledge is the basis of the relationship. That's the principle that's there. That is that Aishwarya is the basis of the relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So therefore they're different things. It's not a problem because you have to start there. You can't start somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, because see, Rupa Goswami is giving in the sixth chapter the 64 items of devotional service, so he wouldn't be giving something in a later chapter that would contradict that. But he's just showing higher and higher levels of applying that. Because he gives the 64 items in the sixth chapter. Then he explains that through many, many chapters, you know, getting into each one of them and giving an explanation. Then he'll explain some spontaneous. So the spontaneous aspect is that it's about Krishna as a person, to please him as a person. It's not about that he's God. You know, we're talking Vajra Bhakti here. So now, if that's in that position, then we'll see is that the Vajra Bhakti is unaffected. Because if it was affected, then we see that Uddhava would have been successful in reducing Nanda and Yashoda's separation by bringing out the aspect of Aishwarya. But it didn't. And we see that in the discussions with the gopis that Krishna sends us his messages and all that, then they don't either. In fact, it means with Nanda Baba, they hear that, but it's, what has that got to do with anything? And then they go back into then they just continue in that rasa. So it doesn't take away from their rasa, it doesn't enhance their rasa. It may be a fact, but it's not specifically that it enhances or distracts. It doesn't distract, definitely. And it's not necessarily that it enhances the rasa. But when you're dealing in Aishwarya, the more we understand that, the greater it enhances the rasa. Right? But it tends to shift them out of the whatever is there, their relationship into dasya. Does that make sense? Now we have a phenomena when you're dealing with the gopis in Braja, that the knowledge of these other two aspects of Krishna, then they can even enhance their absorption in him as Braja Krishna. They don't in any way distract and bring out Aishwarya. So they're able to use these aspects as a standard way of dealing and in meditation. Because Krishna then points out that you're not separated from me. We're always together because of how he is everything. He's in there. So there's no way you can be separated. They can use that to make that cultivates their own bhava, but it doesn't create any Aishwarya. So the gopi's position is such that they can appreciate that and they'll work it in. Does that make sense? So That's the thing, is that, let's say, okay, that's the family. Then you have, let's say, the barristers and lawyers and down at the court and other people at the court. So they all know him in that official capacity, and they're comfortable in that. Now, a few of them may start to know him as a person, and then that may become more prominent. Right? But they can still work in the other. But for some, they kind of prefer the formality and all these different things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And even if it's things at home, let's say he's with the family, and they see him, let's say, someplace on vacation, they'll go, hey, isn't that this judge? And then they'll start, it'll remind them of his activities of a judge. Well, you see, the family members, stuff that he does in court, will remind him what he does at home. The way he speaks something in court and that. Yeah, he does just like that at home. Remember the other day we were doing this and he said, does that make sense? So that's the principle, is that they don't get in the way of each other, because if the purpose is developing that love for Krishna, then one doesn't do it. If one maintains an attachment to the Vaidhi, then that can slow things down or distract, into Aishwarya. But if there's not an attachment for it, it's just that's what the acharyas have recommended, that's what we do, then there's no problem. So we should never worry about that. That's in Prabhupada's translation, or that's in the expanded translation?
That's Banumara's.
Yes, I was going to say. Because then there's that, he'll give the things, but you won't get the purport.
It's the purport of Jiva Goswami.
Yes, but I'm saying you don't get the purport of that.
No.
So that's the advantage of here, is that, so there's no difficulty there. Because we see from other aspects that the acharyas mentioned, then we have to apply those points here. Does that make sense? Because we have to understand is that with the gopis, that what's it called? This relationship is called Sambandha Sarupa and Kama Sarupa.
Sambandha Rupa and Kama Rupa.
No. Which?
Kama Rupa and Sambandha Rupa.
They're also called Rupa.
Yeah.
Because within, with when we were discussing the queens, it mentioned about Prema Rupa and Kama Rupa.
Yeah.
I thought there was another name in that. But Sambandha Rupa means the relationship is the prominent element. And so let's say parenthood, friendship, servitorship, it's that relationship, and then everything's based around that because that's the rati they have. But in the conjugal, the kama rupa, because there's a certain oneness that's there that's not to that intensity with the others. Because we have to remember, Krishna's one and different. So that oneness becomes more prominent in there. And so anything that brings out the oneness or how he's pervading, how he's there, then you can see that person in everything. Does that make any sense? It's a much more intense. So it's a matter of the understanding and the approach to it. It's not a matter of knowledge. They're describing the thing, but that's only the description of what it is. The experience of it is not described there. They'll never claim that they can describe it. They'll describe, you know, the techniques, the situations, these kind of things. And they can say that these things are there, these symptoms, but they'll never try to explain the experience. Just that it's, you know, pure unalloyed bliss. That's something. So one doesn't have to worry about that because all these things have. See, the thing where we have to be careful of this anxiety about knowledge and rules technically comes from the Sahajiyas. It's not actually coming from someone who's not. Because otherwise, why is there such technical detail about everything given in Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita, which is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya? And the whole, you see, thrust of the book is to bring one up from, you know, understanding about the Lord to gaining that faith to coming to the platform of prema. So these things of knowledge and practice aren't there. Because we say is no, it has to be raga nuga, but the point is rag means a spontaneous, natural spontaneous. So it's either there or it's not. It's not something that you cultivate as such. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you go to Mangal Arati every day. It's not that you sit there in front, you know, we're not doing one of those self-help things, standing there and, you know, in back of the, I like going to Mangal Arati. I want to come to Mangal Arati. You know, like that.
That's the good. Huh?
To convince yourself to go. See, you're using Raganuga Bhakti to follow Vaidhi.
See? It's a reverse process.
Yes. They're going. Am I going to have to get rough with you? Yeah. There's more where that came from. Okay, I'm going. Yeah, so that's the whole thing is that we've already been given the Raganuga process and we've been given how much of the Vaidhi is necessary to make it work. But because we don't know the difference, we take that if it's a rule at all or it's a knowledge at all, then it's Vaidhi. No, that's not how it is. That's why it says it's the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. And we see that three parts of the whole thing is about on the platform of prema. No? And only the first part is explaining basically from the beginning part up to prema. And the stages, steps, and mentality. So these things are some of the, it's one of the more, the least contemplated. Because the tendency is those who do Vaidhi don't look at the rag, those who do rag, then they think it's something else other than Vaidhi. So this understanding that you're performing the Vaidhi, because this is what the acharyas recommend on how you're going to develop that prema. But it's your interest to serve Krishna and please Krishna. That's why you're there. So if you're there because Shastra says, Guru says, that's why you go to Mangal Arati, then that's fighting. But by going there and appreciating the Mangal Arati, the deities and the Artik and the Kirtan and all that, that appreciation starts to cultivate the natural attraction. But if the reason you go to Mangal Arati is because Krishna likes the devotees to be there at Mangal Arati, how would this go? Okay? Astakaliya Leela here. Okay, so we're talking about the last watch of the night, right? So the eighth section. Vrinda Devi goes in to wake up Radha and Krishna and finally gets them awake and all that, and they're drowsy, and then they go out, out of the kunj like that, and when they get out, no one's there because everybody's still asleep. Because it takes longer for Radha and Krishna to get up, so like that. Or they're up, but they're doing other things and all that. Or they've gone back. Because Radha and Krishna are going to go back on their own anyway. It's not that the maidservants and the others go with them. No, they don't. Everybody goes on their own to their own places. So they've already gotten up and gone back to their own places. So that would be the good end of the night. How you say it? Contemporary scenario, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, our modern Leelamrita, right? So, like that. Yeah. So there's the Mangal Arati. So we're talking about all these rules and Mangal Arati being rules and all that. But who of all people sees the Mangal Arati in Braj? Only the gopis. No one else sees it. There is no Mangal Arati for anybody else. Not that they're not up at that time, but they don't see this Mangal Arati. So this Mangal Arati we've been given is already a Raga Nuga platform. So that's the thing, we don't actually appreciate what we've been given. But we're taking what little we like say, you take all the rules and cut it down to just what's essential for us. Then we give those acharyas give us those rules. Then, because they're rules, we take them. Oh, it says we don't care about the rules. So those are the rules we don't care about. No, it's that we follow those rules. It's everything else that they didn't give us. That's what we don't care about. Is that? Yeah. So it's a fine point. It's that spontaneous attraction to Krishna. So it's not something you can fake or you can practice or. You know what I'm saying? Sahajiyas, they do practice it. They really do. How to cry, roll on the ground, do all these things, they have to practice that. How do you get from a standing position onto the ground without hurting yourself? They have to practice these things. Where in your nose to stick the chili, because if you put it in the wrong place, it may not work right. They have practices. It's not easy. Like that,
That is their
sadhana. Sorry?
That is their
sadhana, yeah. Yeah. So the thing is we just have to understand that trying to do something that it pleases Krishna, and that's the reason we're doing it, that will develop Raga Nuga Bhakti. Doing it just because that's the rule and he's God and all that, that cultivates the Vaidhi aspect. But if you understand ultimately it's about pleasing Krishna, at some point one will cross that. Right? But what is not going to be useful is these things of Vaidhi Bhakti that are given by the Acharyas. And then we say, they don't match in this age, those are archaic, and we're not from that background, so we don't need to follow it and all that kind of thing. Then that's not very useful, because then we will either be engaged in akarma or vikarma. Akarma meaning no activity. It means things we should do, we don't do. That's akarma. We're not doing something wrong, but we're not doing what's right. And vikarma means doing what's wrong. And then we'll start to judge according to that, and that's really, that's not going to get us Vaidhi Bhakti, let alone raw. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess that's the birth of Sri
Krishna. Yes, that's the whole point. If it's not according to that, what's the point? And if we say, oh, but so many people won't accept, those are the people that we're not worried about, because you cannot please everybody. So those are the ones we won't try to please. Is if they think that they can please everybody, even the karmis know you can't do that.
And if you're someone that wishes you wanted to go, like you like Mangalarati, then you just spend some time in Govindaji temple.
In Govindaji temple?
Yeah, just spend some time in Jaipur and then you get inspired.
Oh, it means if you need to get inspired for Mangalarati, yeah. Go there. Yeah, yeah, because everybody goes. The whole city goes. Yes.
The gopis, they see the Brahminda Paramatma aspect, but they see the oneness, and therefore they remember the God. And
but it, no, we're just saying that these aspects are there. We see the difference, and that there's a difference in these three. They don't.
So, because in Brahman and Paramatma, we see the difference. And because we see the difference, because there's a variety, and this variety creates bewilderment, because of which there is forgetfulness of Bhagavan.
No, but there's variety in Brahman and Paramatma anyway.
That's what there's variety.
But they don't have any problem with variety. Variety is not the problem. So why would they have problem with variety? They can see Krishna
they
in everything.
They don't have a problem with variety. We have a problem with variety. So we never tend to remember Bhagavan, which is the actual goal.
What does that got to do with variety? I don't catch that connection.
Because
why is it because of variety we can't see the Lord?
Because of variety, the person doesn't manifest.
The person doesn't manifest.
Whereas here,
because of variety, the person doesn't manifest. Isn't it that the person will manifest because of the variety?
That is the point. But from our side, I'm speaking of that.
See, you have to be very careful here, because as we were discussing, the last question, you have to be worried about what's there on the left of the razor's edge. Now you're presenting what's on the right of the razor's edge. Does that make sense? Is that this idea that spiritual has to be different from what's here? No, whatever's here is coming from the spiritual. We see as whatever's going on as we go through the pastime, we see that things that the Lord's doing that nowadays people do. And the values they have, because it's based on the Lord. Just He does it in all perfection. And we do it because of ourselves, and it's not so perfect. So variety is never the cause for an obstruction to spiritual understanding. That's the idea of the impersonalists. Is that it's the variety and the emotions and relationships and the activities that gets in the way. So if you get rid of that, then we can have spiritual life. You know, just like the others, we get rid of the rules, we get rid of, you know, all these restrictions, we can just do whatever we like. You know, we have no authority, we don't need scriptures, we don't need rules. Then we can be absorbed in Krishna. In other words, the bhava will come because of that. The others because we'll be situated spiritually. But the point is, both are missing the point. They're just missing it on opposite ends of the scale. So variety is not that. We may be attached to certain aspects of the material variety, and so that distracts us, but we're being distracted by material, not by the variety. We want to control and enjoy, so whenever we see something we could control and enjoy, we get distracted. But it's not that. The variety that's there is what's causing an impediment to our spiritual development. Does that make sense?
Yes, so then, how can one develop this attraction to Bhagavan rather than...
How do we develop the attraction of Bhagavan? Is that's by hearing the pastimes of the Lord and the interaction with His devotees. That's how we learn.
Right. And is it possible for yogi sadhakas to momentarily exhibit the emotions of prema and then come back to vaidhi?
Can sadhakas, vaidhi sadhakas, temporarily manifest the emotions of prema and then come back to to the sadhana. So, no, see, is here. When I repeat it, it's not because I don't understand. It's because no one else in the room can hear what you say. It's because she turned off the fan. I could hear you. This morning, I couldn't hear what you were saying like that. I'm not that good at lip reading. Because yeah, otherwise, sometimes... You... Oh, so that's what you hear. Otherwise,
I can hear partially now.
Yeah, because otherwise I don't hear. Sometimes. This morning was tough. So I'm repeating it so others know what I'm talking about. Because it's really annoying when they all go, "What's the question?" You know, like that. So.
Okay.
Huh?
You ask that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, no, sometimes it also, when I'm out traveling, they always go, "What's the question?" I already said the question, but they don't know that what I repeated was the question. So that position, it's not that they manifest prema, they may manifest symptoms of that are seen in bhava, but not prema. Because prema is in its own category. The bhava means that attraction, means the ecstasies. You may see that temporarily, but that's the whole point. Because of its temporariness, they are not counted on that level. Just because they had that doesn't mean now I'm advanced. No. What do you do, you know, 23 hours, 59 minutes, and what do you call it? Let's say 50 seconds, you know, of the day. Then it's going to be some other platform. And if for that 10 seconds there's something like that, and then how many days does that happen on? So that happened, you know, this year at this festival, and the last time that happened was about 6 or 7 years ago, and then before that, 2 years before that, and...
Because Maharaj, that I believe is in it, as soon as they read the Astika Sahitya, they immediately know, I've seen that, you know, that they develop response in their body, they understand.
Nice, and then when they're reading Stardust, then they're doing the same thing. You understand? Means then they'll go back into arguing over pounds, shillings, and pence. No? Yeah. You know, just right when they have their hair standing on end, come up to him and says, "I don't know, there's this boy outside said something about he wanted to meet you in consideration of his daughter or something, some marriage, I don't know, some proposal, I don't know what. I don't know, it's up to you," and then walk off. See what happens. How long does that hair stay standing on end? You understand? So my point is this temporary. Just because it's there, it's nice. But that doesn't mean that now everybody respects them. Now they can ride on that wave of those, you know, 20 seconds. Does that make sense? The point is what are they doing the rest of the time? So when they hear these things, if it causes that, nice. But if they are watching a Hindi movie, do they also not have all kinds of emotional things happening? You know, I mean, you know, how do you feel? You understand? So, in other words, there's somebody who is more soft-hearted and all that. But now when they're chanting the holy name and all that, is this going on? Not as much. You know, understand? So, therefore, it means the heart's softened in certain areas and certain aspects, emotion they may appreciate, and that's good. Anything connected to the Lord, any kind of emotion, that's always a good thing. But you shouldn't say, "Oh, they're so advanced." Maybe at that moment, but then the rest of the time you have to see how they're doing. You know what I'm saying? So like that, then you have to see. So it's not that that doesn't happen, but this is called, what is that called? You have bhava, you have bhava bas, and you have chaya bhava bas. Yeah. Pratibimba. So the shadow, and you have the reflection. So those are already discussed. Most of the time when they discuss these things, they open with that so that you're not distracted that that's what we're talking about. Because the volume that's there is nothing compared to what's going on in there, because it doesn't... Does that make sense? So it's a good thing. But one should understand that this is just a standard part of how the process works, and so people getting that aspects, then that comes up. That's not an uncommon thing.
What is the difference between bhavas and pratibimba?
The Pratibimba is those that they may, because they're following, let's say, the example is given like a Mayavadi. They don't believe in the eternal form of the Lord, but because they're accepting that you can't meditate on transcendence, on nothingness, that they'll meditate on the Lord, so they may take part in kirtans and other devotional activities with the devotees, and because of the niceness of the pure devotion going on, they may feel some transcendental ecstasy. But that's only just a reflection of what the devotees are feeling. Because for themselves, they don't actually have any feelings towards the Lord, so they can't actually be manifesting real bhava. Right? But those who are then properly situated as Vaishnavas, then you may see the chaya, the shadow. Like that. Because it may be a little bit, because that's the thing is, bhava extends down. That's the only thing that's there. It means the taste you get, the newest person, the taste they get from the kirtan or the prasad or anything is bhava, but it's not called bhava because it's so small. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Here. When you get cold next time, you can put this on. It's a blanket. What? It's a blanket. Right, so this next winter, then you can use this. Really warm blanket. You know, look at the length of the hair. So nice. Like that. You know, so it's good quality wool. Huh? Match it with your outfit. A light gray like that.
Huh?
Transparent. We'll go with anything. Does that make sense? So do we call it a blanket? But what's it made out of? Something other than the blanket? No. That's Chaya Namavas. Okay?
Yeah. We see sometimes there are devotees that they're conditioned in such a way that anything, every little small thing of devotion service, if they get in touch with it, they become very emotional in a good way.
Yeah,
but when they're not, they're as emotional in everything else.
Yeah.
There are some other people who practice, you know, according to Vaidhi and everything, and they don't experience those. Neither in devotional service nor outside.
So it's just a matter of the particular piety. So there may be some particular piety that they can appreciate a particular emotional situation. So whether it's on the material or it's on the spiritual, the same. The mechanics are the same, so they're appreciated. But the point is that when that's seen in relationship to Krishna, then it has an advantage. Otherwise, then it's just, you know, it's pleasant, it's nice, but and by that they may then like Krishna consciousness, so they'll get more involved. But the problem is, if they're exposed a lot to what's not Krishna consciousness that has that emotion, then they'll get involved in that. Is that what I'm saying? So then you have to make sure that you create an environment that you're only involved with Krishna conscious experiences that generate that.
My understanding of there's some, I think it's in the Gita or something, that the men, older men of the family involve the women in devotional service or something. The male members of the family involve the women
in service. I'm not sure the context, but I mean the principle is the masculine aspect within the family environment is creating an environment in which all the things have that Krishna conscious potential, either they directly or indirectly. So then the feminine nature, where then you take what's there and engage it and experience it, then will always have a progressive position.
Like my understanding was for that reason that what we were just talking about.
We're just talking about now. Yes, yeah. Yes,
for
yes.
That reason.
Yes, yes. That's the whole point. That's it. So,
Maharaj, perhaps the question is that there is so much variety in the pastimes of the Lord. The Lord is full day performing all these pastimes up there. Therefore, he is he doesn't spend some quality time talking about himself in the first person, like an autobiography. I like yellow dhotis and I like curly head like this. So is there some kind of a scripture where he's speaking like one to one?
But why does he have to say those things?
So then it may have, yeah.
Because like at the end of the Gita, what does he tell Arjuna to do? No, after that.
I said, you do whatever it is.
Like that. And then after that.
I'll repeat the Gita again if you want.
Okay, more than that. In other words, he's saying that you declare this boldly. Right? Why? Because Krishna can say it, but he's a trickster. You know? Like that. But if Arjuna says it, then it will be accepted. So why does Krishna have to say it himself? If the devotees say it, then they know Krishna. You know, we don't know Krishna, so they know. So if they say, then what's the problem? Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. So the acharyas, they tell us what he likes.
Also, in the last chapter we discussed that Krishna is very shy, his particular quality. And because of his particular shyness, he never speaks about himself, but rather he engages his devotees, you know, the acharyas, to speak about Krishna.
About himself.
Yeah.
Good with that? Krishna is shy, so therefore he doesn't talk about himself. So unless he's talking about the absolute truth, like he says he talks about Paramatma, he says you should know him. He talks about him as in the third person. So the only way he'll talk about himself in that way is in the third person. So unless it's in a pastime where he's interacting with the devotees and it's part of the thing of that youthful arrogance, then you might see he talks about himself. But that's part of the pastime, that's not an instruction. But in instructions, he'll talk about himself in the third person.
Marga, about this blanket thread example that you have given, is it so that somebody who reads, say, Gajendra Moksha Lila, all the shlokas there, or somebody who reads Rupa Goswami's Keshavashtakam, is like very, is it like, it's not explicitly esoteric, but like Vraj Lila is described nicely. So he gets more points there and less bhakti, like Anartha Nivritti will speed up over there, something like that.
I don't quite catch.
Like, will you become quicker?
No, it's just a matter of what absorbs you. You'll move quicker when you're more absorbed and more surrendered to Krishna. That's how you move quicker. It's not what you're reading. People will present, oh no, if you read this and that, but it's like, you know, yeah. Does that make sense? So these things are something that very naturally develop. So we don't have to worry. Having that natural spontaneous love for Krishna is a natural position for the living entity. So we don't have to worry that it won't develop. But it doesn't mean that we're not careful about how we deal. But the point is it's all because the acharyas said this. Does that make sense? Because otherwise then we could say as well, Rupa Goswami said this in Nectar Devotion, so because he said it's a rule is coming from scripture, therefore it's Vaidhi, so I don't have to follow this because not following this makes me Raganuga. You know, so it can get really weird. So we always follow the acharyas. Because we have to remember when push comes to shove, our relationship with Radharani is Dasya. Like that. Krishna may be Kanja, but Radharani, it's Dasya. So that may put things more into balance. Because we're going dasya means we're serving, following what she wants done. I mean, you can be parental, you can be all these others. But I'm just saying in the conjugal rasa, what like Lord Chaitanya is talking about, then the point is we're following the line of Radharani, but it's we're servant. Rather, I mean, you want to be friend, you can be, but then it limits also the services that can be done. Certain things you can be more prominent in that, but certain services you can't be involved. Does that make sense?
But the same principle applies for any person. Like, if one is aspiring for a parent, then you are Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj as the leaders, and one is to serve in the same way.
Yes. But you may be friends with them. They'll be maybe senior friends, but it'll still be friends. Like that. So, but here is that it's servitorship.
About this class of devotees, this premature imagined wanting raganuga, is it so that they're looking for emotional kick of exchanges that they're not getting in
not
their
necessarily.
Material life?
Not
like
necessarily.
Bad parent, bad wife. Like
not husband. Necessarily. It can be just they want the best. So rag's the best. That's what they want. So. But the point is these things come naturally. You follow the process, you have that point of wanting to develop love and following the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, then it'll naturally go in that direction. But if you are attached to the rules and not thinking about the direction, then that will take you to Vaikuntha or Dwarka, like this. It'll take, Dwarka is also Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? But if it's that the goal is Braja Bhakti, then why following the rules won't get you there? Because it's only by Vaidhi it elevates you up to the point where you're steady in devotional service. So we have to be very, very careful about these. That's why then all these points are made by the acharyas, because very easily it makes sense. Oh yeah, we should do something different. But there is nothing different. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Should we pay the same continue?
Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, after fully worshipping the sage, the great sage of the demigods according to Vedic injunctions, Lord Krishna, who is himself the original sage, Narayana, the friend of Nara, conversed with Narada, and the Lord's measured speech was as sweet as nectar. Finally, the Lord asked Narada, what may we do for you, our Lord and Master? Srila Jiva Goswami comments, the Lord was capable of doing proper worship because he was the establisher of all mantras, right? Rishi, he means he's the one who's established all worship. He's the potency of all the mantras. He is the uniqueness of the rishis, everything like that. He's always young, Puranaha. He was always, remaining in the same condition because of being Swayam Bhagavan. Although Krishna was constantly by their sides, as well as exclusively alone, his feet appeared to them to be newer and newer. The goddess of fortune, although by nature always restless and moving, could not quit the Lord's lotus feet. So what woman could be detached from those feet, having once taken shelter of them? Srimad Bhagavatam 111.33. The goddess of fortune being restless means that the point is this energy is restless and moving. Does money always stay with people? No, but she always stays at the lotus feet of the Lord. So when there's service to Krishna, then she's there. But if you're not doing, then she's restless. Thus the Lord was not old, but acted like an ancient sage. Right? So that's the meaning. He's acting like an ancient sage, though he's always youthful. The Lord had appeared in the world in the form of Narayana, friend of Nara, for instituting such rules of Dharma. This means that Narayana Rishi had entered into Krishna when Krishna appeared in the world. Ta vimau vai bhagavato harer amsha viha gatao bhara vyayaya cha bhuva krishnao yadu kurud vaha. These two portions of the Lord that entered Krishna and Arjuna, best of the Yadu and Kuru dynasties, for relieving the earth of its burden. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.159. So whenever the avatari comes, all the avatars come and are part of the avatari. Krishna made his appearance to demonstrate that all forms are amshas, or colors, of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Narada was the best of sages, Rishi Varyam. He appeared following after the appearance of the Lord, who is also a sage, Rishi He. Since Krishna is Narayana, Rishi, he is Narada's guru. How can he worship Narada? He did this according to the rules. Vidhi no ditena. In playing the role of a Kshatriya, it was proper for him to worship the Brahmin, right? Because the point is the worship is being done on according to the etiquette of what's the environment that's there. So since Krishna is taking the role of a Kshatriya, therefore then the Kshatriya can do these things. You take it from the absolute truth and platform, then what's there to absolute truth with, or worship the absolute truth with? So you have to come down to the aspect of the manifestation. So when we deal with the manifestation, then you decide. It's all the Lord, it's all non-different from the Lord and all that, but we still use the ghee lamp for the ghee lamp and the camphor lamp for the camphor lamp. We don't switch them around. Right? The point is that they may be all absolute and non-different from the Lord, but when you at the point of the manifestation and how it's being applied, that then you apply it according to what it is. So Krishna, here in this case, even though he's Narayan of Naranarayan Rishi, so he's Narad Muni's guru, right? So then but here in the manifest form, he's playing that of a Kshatriya. So as a Kshatriya, then he can worship. Lokavat lila kaivalyam. The Lord performs his pastimes like the play of an ordinary person. Vedanta Sutra 2.133.
The same sutra was said yesterday.
Sorry?
The most frequently repeated sutra of Jiva Goswami.
Oh, okay. Another meaning is as follows. O Lord, of whom Mahavishnu is your expansion, Narayana, Mahavishnu, the source of the other Purushas, is not you. Nor is the third Purusha dwelling within all beings, nor is the second Purusha the witness of all planets. Mahavishnu called Narayana because he is the shelter of the Karana ocean, which gives rise to material creation, is simply your expansion. That expansion of yours is real, not illusory. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.14. So he's an expansion, but he's real, and so he acts in his own capacity. Right? It's not that it's just an illusion. It's not there. Just like we expand things here from the impersonal point of view, or the Mayavadi point of view, is that the field of action according to our desire. Then we're expanding all these things, and then trying to collect and work with and doing all these things. But it's all illusion, right? But here, because it's Krishna, Krishna's expanding. He's the absolute truth, so his expansions are real. Though you are Bhagavan, of whom Narayan is your expansion, you perform human pastimes, nada sakaha. There is a Smriti rule, satyam bruyat priyam bruyat. Speak truthfully and sweetly. According to this rule, vidhino ditena, the Lord praised him with sweet words, amra mistaya, which were also true according to scriptural authority, mitaya, and made his request. O Master, you are my master because you are a Brahman. What can I do for you? Actually, I can do nothing for you. For fun, he asked him. He covered his powers with his words. Seeing Narada thinking of the Lord with reverence on seeing the spectacle of Dwarka, the Lord seemed to scold him. He's saying, you come here, we're a king, so what can we do? So all this Aishwarya stuff, come on, let's... Sri Narada said, Almighty Lord, it is no surprise that you, the shelter of all worlds, show friendship for all people and yet subdue the envious. As we well know, you descend by your sweet will in order to bestow the highest good in this universe by maintaining and protecting it. Thus your glories are widely sung. So these contradictions, he's showing friendship, but he's subduing the envious. He's the supreme Lord, but he's respecting the Brahmins. So these contradictions are a problem for him. So he's giving the highest benefit to the universe by setting these proper examples. That's how he's maintaining and protecting. Because he creates all the rules, he's the potency behind them, then he follows them. It'd be just like, okay, now by following the God's laws, you'll benefit. Now, if God doesn't follow them and keeps changing the rules that he follows, will anyone follow the rules? No, so will they benefit? No, he's independent. He could do that, but he doesn't. So what he expects others to do, that's what he does, and that's what then causes it all to work. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Oh no, thus your glories are widely sung. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, in the material world, if the object of worship worships the worshipper, it will not be beneficial for the worshipper. However, because you are independent, if you worship your devotee, or if you receive his worship, or if you punish him, it is always beneficial. This is expressed in this verse. Right, so on the material platform, one has to be careful about these things. But on the transcendental platform, it's not a problem, because whatever Krishna does is for everyone's benefit. It is not at all amazing for you, the master of all people, that you are the benefactor, Maitri, of all people. He's the master of all people, but he's the benefactor of all people. So there's no contradiction. Because you are the master of all people and all people are in the status of dependent jivas, they must factually be your servants. In the explanation of Om in the Padma Purana, it is said here. Also, let us say, okay, we have this hair from the blanket. Now we go, oh, that's nothing. What if we were a microbe? Yeah, but does that still make it the size of the blanket? No. So that's the whole point. Being microbes, we think, oh, whoa, such great devotion. But for those who, you know, come from the land of blankets, then we're not talking, you know, like that. Whoa, what a blanket. They go, that's a blanket? Okay. Just to make sure that we have the size, but also the space. You are the master of all people, and all people are in the status of dependent jivas. They must factually be your servants. In the explanation of Om in the Padma Purana, it is said, A kareno chate Vishnu, shrir u karena kat yate, makaras tu tayor dashas, panchavimsha prakir titaha. A refers to Vishnu, u refers to Lakshmi, and refers to the 25th element, the jiva, the servant of the other two. So then that's his position. So the jiva is always the servant. For the brahmanas like me who worship you with devotion, your worshipping us gives displeasure. For others who serve you like Vidura and Uddhava, you give them sorrow by refusing to accept their worship. Others who are like animals living in the material world who do not worship you are given your glance of mercy, and other evil persons like Jarasandha you punish. For all these people you are the benefactor, for you appear in this world by your free will for giving the highest benefit to all the people of the world in the form of prema bhakti and liberation, as well as maintenance and protection. This I know. Sri Narada continued. Now I have seen your feet, which grant, because on all these cases, the pleasure of the Lord is the real position. So if the Lord wants to do this activity and set this kind of example, and he likes taking part in the pastime in this way, otherwise, he is all these positions. So why would he give directions or give a structure or rules or activities of a particular varna or ashram if he didn't like it? Because he is those positions anyway. Right? He's the kshatriya. Right? The potency of a kshatriya to be a kshatriya is coming from Krishna. So, if he didn't like worshipping the Brahmins, why would that be the rule? Right? Does that make sense? You know, that's how it works. So, whatever it is, then all the rules are there for the varnas and ashrams when he comes and plays those roles. It's because that's what he likes to do.
Huh? Can you explain that? When he says, brothers, you serve you, like the door of Eden, he gives them sorrow by refusing to accept their worship.
Because he takes them as senior. Right? Does that make sense? So, in the same way as Narada, he's not accepting his worship, he's worshiping him. Does that make sense? So that's that. So he can come, get respected, give some instructions, you know, do that kind of a thing like that. You don't see Narada Muni, you know, sitting down there and singing some bhajans for Krishna and all those kind of things. He'll do that, and then he'll go to where the Lord is you know, sleeping on Ananta Sesh, and there he'll go. So you see, when you see these old paintings of Lord Vishnu lying down on Sesha, you know, with Lakshmi and Brahma coming out as late, then Narada and Hanuman are always, and Garuda are always there. You know, and they're always dancing like madmen. So in that environment, because he is the Supreme Lord there. But here, he's playing the part of a king. So then, Sri Narada concluded, now I have seen your feet, which grant liberation to your devotees, which even Lord Brahma and other great personalities of unfathomable intelligence can only meditate upon within their hearts, and which those who have fallen into the well of material existence resort to for deliverance. Please favor me so that I may constantly think of you as I travel about. Please grant me the power to remember you. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, by asking this benediction from the Lord, the sage Narada showed the ideal prayer of all pure devotees. A pure devotee never asks for any kind of material or spiritual benediction for the Lord. His only prayer is that he may not forget the lotus feet of the Lord in any condition of life. A pure devotee does not care whether he is put into heaven or hell. He is satisfied anywhere, provided he can constantly remember the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya taught this same process of prayer in the Shikshastaka, in which he clearly stated that all he wanted was devotional service, birth after birth. A pure devotee does not even want to stop the repetition of birth and death. To a pure devotee, it does not matter whether he has to take birth again in the various species of life. His only ambition is that he does not forget the lotus feet of the Lord in any condition of life. So that's the whole point, to be able to always be absorbed in the Lord in that devotional attitude. That's what, then, the kind of benediction that is wanted. Because other things are temporary. That's eternal.
So, devotee, I'm not sure devotee. Is it the only prayer which is recommended?
It means that's the recommended prayer. If you want to say other things, the point is better they're said to Krishna than someone else.
Yes, yes. But this prayer is like...
This is what we're trying to attain. Like that.
So by training ourselves with this prayer, we can use this level of prayer.
Yes, yes. Because if we're consistent, then it means we won. It's just like, example, someone comes and knocks once on the door. It means just one. Then you kind of, what was that? But there's no more. And then, but if there's a regular, constant knocking, then you know someone's there, and then you open the door. Yeah, so makes sense. Verses 19 to 36. Krishna, the perfect actor and teacher. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Narada then entered the palace of another of Lord Krishna's wives, my dear king. He was eager to witness the spiritual potency possessed by the master of all masters of mystic power. Footnote 20. After that, he entered the house of Satyabhama, the wife of Krishna, who attracts the heart with great prema. There he saw the Lord playing at dice with his beloved consort and his friend Uddhava. Lord Krishna worshipped Narada by standing up, offering him a seat, and so on. Then, as if he did not know, ask him, when did you arrive? What can needy persons like us do for those who are full in themselves? In any case, my dear Brahmana, please make my life auspicious. Thus addressed, Narada was astonished. He simply stood up silently and went to another palace. 21. Uddhava acted as the witness to the game of dice. The two words cha indicate that both Uddhava and Satyabhama were principal persons in the game, since the witness acts as an assistant. So as a witness, because otherwise if somebody makes any tricks, then you're there. You know, because probably in other games you don't necessarily need a witness, but with Satyabhama you would. Because they'll both become so clever, you know, just as for fun. This time Naraji saw that the Lord was engaged as an affectionate father petting his small children. From there he entered another palace and saw Lord Krishna preparing to take his bath. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti points out that 14 and a half verses describe what Narada saw. Srila Sugadeva Goswami continued. This time Naraji saw that Lord Krishna was engaged as an affectionate... Oh, we just said that. No. Petting his small children. From there he entered another path and saw... No, we just did that. Yeah, there's something wrong in the verses. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, in all the houses, first Krishna worship and praise Narada. This should be understood, though not mentioned in the verses. Narada saw Achashta, Krishna playing with his infant sons. Just as Krishna with one body had many appearances, with different awarenesses and different activities, so also Uddhava and others with one body had many appearances. Narada, who went at the speed of the mind to 16,000 palaces in a moment, saw Krishna performing different activities at different times. This means that Krishna revealed within one moment the whole day of 60 Gatikas, including all its parts, starting with early morning and along with that all the corresponding activities. And Krishna entered into those times. It is understood that Narada could witness all the different activities of different times of the complete day almost at once. In one house, Narada saw Krishna preparing to bathe. This indicates it was early morning or dawn in that palace. So as he went, he saw the full 24 hours what Krishna was doing. And it all happened in a moment. And so everybody's all there at all these ones at once. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, in one palace, the Lord was offering oblations into the sacrificial fires. In another, worshipping through the five Mahayagyas. In another, feeding Brahmins. And in yet another, eating the remnants of food left by the Brahmins. That means he's already... So in each of these, you see, these are a progression. It means you're going to get up, you're going to prepare for the bath, you're going to take the bath, then you're going to perform your oblations in the fire, then you're going to do the Pancha Mahayagyas, then you feed the Brahmins, and in another you eat the remnants left out, because each one of these comes after the other. The BBT purport mentions, the five Mahayagyas, or five great sacrifices, are defined as follows. Pato homas chati tinam sarpaya tarpanam balihi. Reciting the Vedas, offering oblations into the sacrificial fire, waiting on guests, making offerings to the forefather, and offering a share of one's food to living entities in general. So those are the five, because these means these all go to those who you, living entities in general, because you get a benefit from the living entities in general. Does that make sense? You know, the forefathers, and you have a family, you're in there, you have particular, you know, facilities and all that is there. Then guests, or that means, you know, the Brahmins and all that, because guest means Brahmin. Like others, then, we'll call them by general terms a guest, but technically when the Vedas are describing how you deal with a guest, everything in the house stops for them, you take care of everything, everyone thinks at their disposal. That means a Brahmin. Like that, your friend comes over, that doesn't apply. You know, he feeds the guest first, you know, gives all facility, takes care, then they eat afterwards, but if your friend comes over, you just sit and eat together. Right? Does that make sense? That's why, let's say, you're at the house, you're going to arrange to, you know, to take care of a guest, and then your friend comes over, then you'll see, at least in traditional houses, that friend will assist you in serving the guest. Right? So that, like that, it's you know, it, so it's different. So here, that means the Brahmins. Sacrificial fire, you know, then you have the reciting the Vedas or the sages, the sacrificial fire is the demigods. So in this way, then all the five debts are paid. Like that. But if you're doing devotional service, then you're studying the scriptures because it pleases Krishna, you're performing worship and all that, you know, the Sankirtan Yajna, the Yajnas, the Pujas, all these things because it pleases Krishna. You take care of the devotees and all that, that pleases Krishna. Then the forefathers, I mean, we respect the previous acharyas and all that, so that's there. And then a share, we distribute prasad and all that kind of thing like that. It's all part of the process.
Okay.
Yes. The form of the yajnas, no. It means the Sankirtan yajna will be part of the Bhagavad.
The fire.
It means the fire with the mantras and the ghee and all that. That's Vedic.
Even in
the you can, there is pancharatrik yajnas you can perform. And so for us, because we're doing the diksha is a pancharatrik ritual. So you can either use pancharatrik rituals to perform the yajna or Vedic. It doesn't matter. But the initiation itself would be according to the pancharatrik. Upanayanam is Vedic. Vivaha is Vedic. So all the samskars, those are all Vedic. So only the initiation, you know, the ritual, so into deity worship and that's a pancharatra. And by the initiation of the holy name, that's Bhagavat. So we can say is the name is Bhagavat, the Gayatri mantras other for Guru Gauranga and Radha and Krishna and that, those are pancharatra. And then the Brahma Gayatri, that's Vedic.
Because sometimes
So does that mean then if they go down and register the marriage, then they have to get married again because they didn't sit in the regular? Ask the person that. You know what I'm saying? These things, who's ever, where is that ever, this is the first time I've ever heard that one. Yeah, no, it's just, the devotees can come up with the most amazing thing. Because if you don't perform a yajna, he's out of a job, so of course, like that. You know what I'm saying? What took other lines hundreds of years to develop that in their ritualistic Brahmins, we can do it in one generation. Yeah, that's the power of the Sankirtan movement. You know.
What was the exact concoction?
Exact concoction. How much parts water, how much lemon juice, how much...
What is the theory?
The theory is if you got initiated, second initiated, but didn't sit in a fire yajna, then you have to get second initiated again, because it's the yajna that actually is the real second initiation. The mantra gotten from guru and all that, that means when we say the pancha samskar, that you got mantra and yaga, you know, it means the mantra from the guru and the authority, it means, and the permission to worship the deities and that. That's not real initiation. Real initiation is sitting in the fire sacrifice. That's what they're saying. I've never heard that one before. I've heard is that you can't sit there, then whenever there's any yajna going on, sit in on that, you know. Like you see so many times is that, you know, there's... One person's there, you know, initiating. He's got three devotees there, but there's 10 there. He says, well, who are the other seven? All, no. They're from all, you know, this one and that one. They all heard you're doing a yajna. Okay, well, I'll send all my people there. Is that all right? And so, yeah. So, that I've heard. That's been going on.
Home.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying that's been going on forever. But this one, where unless you sat for the fire yagya, you have to. So, what about first? Do they have to redo the first?
I have to do.
And I'm telling you, unless one doesn't sit in the fire yagya, he's not allowed to do deity worship, not picking up thing. You know, all the Brahminical sevas. That's a fact.
That's a fact. Where? But I'm saying, but has he gotten the mantras and all that?
Yes, he's got the mantras.
Can he chant the mantras? Is that bona fide?
Yes, it's bona fide.
But the point is that chanting the mantras is worship of the deity. So if he can't worship the deity, can he actually chant the mantras? And even if he did chant the mantras, would he actually get the benefit from chanting the mantras? Yes, but it is a rule so that people don't skip out on that, because otherwise people are too busy and they'll never do it. So therefore you make the rule you have to sit here, otherwise you can't. Otherwise why would they have to have that rule? Right? Because people skip out on it. You know, 10 yagyas go by, oh, I never had the time, I was just that. But you tell them you can't do anything, you'll see they'll be there at the next one. In fact, they'll be the first one there. Like that. So that's just, you know, that's just good management. So that's a rule of management. That's not a spiritual fact. You know, it's just like, what about the one, if your Brahman thread breaks, then you can't talk until you put on a new Brahman thread. In India, amongst the Brahmins, they all follow that. So if they break a thread, they immediately go find a new thread. Who doesn't want to talk? But I've seen devotees with broken threads go on for days, weeks, until it just completely falls apart because they have no time. But if you tell them you can't talk or eat or anything until you have a new thread, you'll see in the next 10 minutes they got a new thread.
Devotees get the thread in advance, you know, 1 year before it breaks. So they keep it ready for us.
You know, so just in case. And it's right there. So it's just, as soon as this breaks, then they just immediately pull it out. Yeah. You understand? So these are just, these rules are there because Manu doesn't mention them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. That's why the 12th chapter is there. The 12th chapter is for those things that come up that, you know, you would never think about. And so then he gives a group of people who should sit and discuss and decide what should be done. So, in the situation, if it works, then that's nice. But to try to make that a standard everywhere, then that you have to be very careful. That's very, one has to be very, very careful. Because especially when you come over here, you'll have a lot of problems. Bengalis are, they're the most independent. But at the same time, the most submissive. They won't buy it at all. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows on these sacrifices. In another palace, Krishna was found performing the Pancha Yajna sacrifice, which is compulsory for a householder. This yajna is also known as panchashuna. Knowingly or unknowingly, everyone, specifically the householder, is committing 5 kinds of sinful activities. When we receive water from a water pitcher, we kill many germs that are in it. Similarly, when we use a grinding machine or make foodstuffs, we kill many germs. When sweeping the floor or igniting a fire, we kill many germs. When we walk on the street, we kill many ants and other insects, and also germs. Consciously or unconsciously, in all our different activities, we are killing, right? So someone's walking down the street, you know, dragging his feet. What are you doing? Why are you dragging your feet? Killing germs. Antibacterial. Right? Yeah, but don't do that. It attracts ghosts also. I guess they like all the dead germs. Therefore, it is incumbent upon every household to perform the panchashuna sacrifice to rid himself of the reactions to such sinful activities. So that means if you're a grihastha, it doesn't matter if you're Vedic, non-Vedic, if you're devotee, not devotee, you have to do these 5. It's mandatory. But if you're a devotee, then by the devotional process you're following, you follow it nicely, it already covers this. So the point is you have to perform this, but it's already taken care of by bhakti. Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are the basic things. That, and then you have the whole Bali, that means that when you're giving out to everybody, you have the Bali dham, which means, the rice means that all these different places in the house, or all these different entities, then they control this. And there's a lot of them. I'm not sure how long it takes to do the Bali peak puja, but it's a long time. But now, if you've cooked your rice, and then done the you know, the proper offering, and then the amount of rice you cooked wasn't enough for that meal, and you cooked more rice, you don't have to do it again. It's already included in the last one. So just so you know. See.
So what happened with James? They didn't want to do Bali dham. They're just wearing the...
They don't follow none of the Vedic stuff. But I'm just saying, it doesn't matter who you are. By the laws of nature, you're responsible. So even if you're sitting, you know, in Heidelberg, you're still responsible. Like that. It's the way it is. So, therefore, you follow either the ritual as it is, or you, by performing devotional service, you know, in its fullness, then it takes care of all these things. So the point is, it has to be done. But devotional service takes care. So one who surrendered to Krishna, then the debts are all paid. Right? So it's not that, oh, we don't have to do it. No, you're doing it by taking part in devotional service. Does that make sense? We're just putting this emphasis this way to block the aspect of us trying to get rid of all rules because we think we're devotees. That's Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, in his commentary on this verse, again points out that all the different times of the day were occurring simultaneously in Lord Krishna's palaces. Thus Narada saw a sacrifice, a morning ritual, and at about the same time he saw Lord Krishna feeding the Brahmins and accepting their remnants, a noontime activity. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, somewhere Lord Krishna was observing the rituals for worship at sunset by refraining from speech and quietly chanting the Gayatri Mantra. And elsewhere, never heard it described that way, right? Chanting your Gayatri means refraining from speech. Sorry? Yes, but what I'm saying is I've never heard it referred to in this point. We just say, I'm chanting Gayatri. But actually, you're not talking and chanting Gayatri. It's slightly different. Doesn't mean that you're talking in either of them. But one is you're going along doing whatever you're doing, then you chant Gayatri and go on whatever you're doing. This is you stop talking, stop. You just stop, chant your Gayatri, focus on that, then go back to what you were doing. Slightly different. And I have seen people talk while they're doing the guy. Sorry? Yes. Meditate. Yeah, prolonged meditation. Especially managers, they love to talk while they're chanting the guy. Don't do that. You know, but I'm chanting guy. Yeah, so like that, then you get things done, right? No? Yeah, sorry. Okay. And elsewhere he's moving about with sword and shield in the area set aside for sword practice. Footnote 22. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the word sandhyam upasinam indicates sunset rituals. Whereas the words asi, charma, bhyam, charantam referred to sword practice, this takes place at dawn. in one place, like, because it has to be areas set aside for sword practice, so nobody just walks in, you know, and wishes they had it.
I'm confused. This, because Narada Muni wanted to see that, how it was going on, and was, or it was going on always like that, and Narada was able to keep it.
And the parallel universes? That doesn't create confusion.
No.
No, okay. So, the whole point is that Narada wanted to see what does the Lord, he's married 16,108 queens. What does he do? Because he's in each palace, expanded as himself. In each palace. It means he's expanded. So it's not that it's somebody else or different, it's him. So the same conscious Lord, he's conscious of all these all at once. And he's taking part in each one. How is he doing that? So now, if he just goes and sees what he's doing at one time, then of course that's going to be nice. But if Krishna then, to fulfill his desire, shows him the full day, you know, activities, then that makes it even more appreciated. Because he sees each palace is definitely doing something different. But it's not that they don't happen in the normal form. And in the parallel universes, as soon as that moment is finished here, it manifests in that next universe. And then it goes on to the next one, and then the next one. So, it's in its natural order, just for Narada Muni, that it's all at once. In one place, Lord Garadgaraja was riding on horses, elephants, and chariots. And another place, he was resting on his bed, while bards recited his glories. 23. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that riding on horses and elephants is a noon activity, whereas one lies down during the latter part of the night. Somewhere he was consulting with royal ministers like Uddhava, and somewhere else he was enjoying in the water, surrounded by many society girls and other young women. 24. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Lord Krishna met with his counselors around dusk and enjoyed water sports in the afternoon. Because these are all just the timings when Manu says they're supposed to be done. You meet with these ministers at this time, for one thing. Otherwise, you're meeting in the court. Then it would mention the court. But when you just meet with the ministers on their own, it's generally the prime minister or, you know, the general or these kind. Then you do that in the evening. Because after the day, after all the spies, after everything's happened, then you meet to see what happened during the day. What's the plan for the next day? Right? Then when you come to court, then you already have an idea. It's not like, okay, now what are we going to do today? Right? Somewhere, he was giving well-decorated cows to exalted brahmanas, and elsewhere he was listening to the auspicious narration of epic histories and Puranas. 25. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, he was giving cows in the morning and hearing the histories and Puranas in the afternoon. According to the Smriti scriptures, it is said, Itihasa Purana Bhyam Shastra Sapta Makau Nayet. One should pass the sixth and seventh parts of the day, afternoon and evening, in hearing histories and Puranas. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah, so we see this time. Because it's not the end of the day. You know, it's in that afternoon part. You know, it's after lunch. It's after the time between. It's after the time after lunch and when the brain starts to work again. So that's like that. So that's if you want to do serious. But otherwise, when this brain's not working, stories work really well. So that's why Puranas in the afternoon. Well, things like Sanskrit, philosophy, and all those would be in the morning. That's why we do the Vedanta Sutra first thing. We don't. If we tried to do that now, you can imagine what kind of, you know. You know, brains would be total mush. Huh? Yeah, we're the dummies.
We would cover a lot of them.
Yeah, we would. We would. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurapati.